Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Oh, pub me to sleep, and shroud my slumbers with the gloaming dusks of former skies. And when I wake, greet me with long lingering streets that lead far away, beyond memory, beyond desire, into the further realm, and into the moon underwater. Robin, it is a tonic to see you sat at my bar, so how does the bar find you?
Fine. I've been bejabbed for a second time, so I'm fully bejabbed.
Well, I have been bejabbed for a second time today, too.
Great. How are you feeling?
I feel good. I mean, I've had a headache for 2 days, but I think that's a sort of a stress/tension headache. I don't think that's anything to do with being bejabbed. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I feel fine. Bit of a sore arm. But so I don't really know why I'm lying down on the bar and the moon underwater on my left arm. It seems stupid now.
It has healing qualities, the bar at the moon underwater, somewhat like the waters of Lourdes.
Yeah.
And various sites of religious or historic interest.
Why don't you try just resting that sore head of yours on some of these, just on the wood there, see if that helps.
Oh, let's give it a go. Do you know what? It feels like fresh water is running through my neck and into my mind. And I have to say it's clearing, like a cloud that parts to reveal a nicer cloud.
I'm just worried that people are going to start making pilgrimages to the moon underwater for its healing properties.
Well, that's to be encouraged, I would say. I've been thinking a lot, Robin, after recent foot tennis events about nationhood and nationalities. I wonder what nation the moon underwater represents, because, nations have different vibes to pubs. And I wonder if, perhaps, the moon underwater is a pub for all nations.
Yeah, so it's pluralism.
Yeah, it's a pluralist pub for all nations, but perhaps does maintain, either written out on some kind of board or just in the vibe, some of the great British tendencies for decency, politeness, tolerance. I get that vibe from it. How do you feel?
Well, just to look at the flag, we've literally got every colour on there. Mm. Every colour.
But doesn't that make the flag very like that? You know, when you have to select a colour from a colour spectrum in a Word document or an Instagram, and it's basically a sort of a smudge of every colour in the spectrum. And you have to sort of pick a cursor. It's quite actually hard. It's actually quite pointless.
Well, I quite like getting the codes, you know, hashtag F-E, 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 something like that. B3, I don't know, 4.
Yeah, so that's maybe the flag of the moon underwater is just that sort of smudge spectrum you get when selecting your colour of text for your Instagram story post.
Yeah, the only hashtags we have here are those hashtags which determine those colours.
Mm.
Because we don't have social media here.
No, not at all, thank the Lord.
But we do have it outside the pub in order to tell people about goings-on in the pub, including live Moon Underwaters. We will be bringing the spirit of the Moon Underwater to a pub near you, if you live in Chiswick. And we'd be delighted to see you there with a number of rotating vibe guests that we've got. And the tickets are available for dates on the 15th and 22nd of August, the 5th, 19th and 26th of September. So five live Moon Underwater pods, but not five live, as in five live Moon Under pods. And due to the recent government announcement about relaxation of restrictions, we can now release even more ticks. So head to moonunderpod.com and get yourself a tick, or two, or three, or four ticks. And we shall be able to quaff pints togenst.
Togenst. What can people expect from the Moon Underwater live shows, John?
They can expect all that you witness by listening to the Moon Underwater, from being in the Moon Underwater with us, but you'll actually be able to see us and you'll be able to hear us slurping our pints, the odd hiccup perhaps, and you'll be able to hear just great chat with our guests in a lovely pub, and it's in a sort of a separate room of the pub, so it's not around your regs, your regulars. It's in a nice big separate room with its own little bar, and it's just a little sort of nice little slice of fun.
Yes.
Did you sigh for the mail today, Robin, the missed mail?
Yes, I sighed, and the mail did come. You know, the mail is it in America where the mail is a symbol of a trumpet, isn't it? A kind of trumpets. The missed mail is the symbol is a sigh.
Right.
It's hard to describe, you know, I mean, I can't describe it to you, but you see it. It's like that's the universal symbol of a sigh.
Like a corporate sigh logo.
Yeah, a corporate sigh logo. No, it's beyond language, but... Yeah, had some delightful messages via the missed mail. A couple of people writing in to do with the mention last week about candlelit pubs. I was talking about the Firehouse in Exeter. Hello, chaps. If you like candlelit pubs, the greatest you could find would be the Oval in Cork. Candles in the double figures in a pub of almost entirely wooden interior. Sounds a bit dangerous. Get to the hearth at the end of the pub for extra fire. No matter how cold outside, it's always far too hot. No matter how far out the snug you try to sneak unnoticed. From Alec in Manchester. But that pub really does look absolutely stunning.
Oh, have you looked it up in your mind?
Yeah, I've looked it up in my mind.
What's it called again?
The Oval in Cork. Oh, candlelit snugs.
I'm just looking it up in my mind now.
Oh, yeah, I think I'd be happy to live and die there.
Oh, my district.
Oh, my vague district.
Oh, the districts of my past. Oh, I really like that.
This one of the photos is sort of quite blurry and vague. I hope it's like that in there.
Oh, yeah, I can see the one you mean.
Yeah.
it's like a photo of someone's memory.
Yeah. And another great missed mail here from Jamie in Perth, Australia. About gaslight pubs, not about kind of psychologically manipulating someone, but I grew up in Harrogate and frequented a lovely little pub called Hales Bar in my formative years. It was a small bar, a bit like the Crown Posada in Newcastle. Great pub, with a saloon bar on one side and an all-booth seating in the main bar, making it great for hiding in plain sight. However, as an old Edwardian pub, it was gas-lit. Literally, the wall lights were powered by gas, burning on a sort of gauze bulb. There were physical handles to decrease or increase the amount of gas being burnt, and thus the brightness of the warm, glowing globes. It also had gas taps on the bar. Again, it sounds quite dangerous. It also had gas taps on the bar itself. These little pilot lights were, at least in the 90s, permanently lit, and smokers used them to light their tabs. I've not seen this used in any other pub since and wondered how many other establishments have used gas lights. Are any still using them? Or, as I suspect, they have been outlawed by safety bureaucrats these days. That's great. Love the pod. Thanks, Jamie. That's brilliant. I think the Crown in Belfast used to be gaslit, but obviously when it was rebuilt, it was no longer gaslit.
Rob, if you look up Hales Bar in your mind,
yeah,
there is a photo of an alleyway that Hales Bar backs onto.
So if I'm looking it up in my mind, am I selecting images or all in my mind's browser?
You're looking at all, but when it comes up in your mind on maps,
yeah,
on the right-hand side of your mind, you know there's an option to just see the photos in your mind.
Photos. Oh, that's nice. That's a sort of, what's the panorama? Oh my God. This is fantastic. And there is an actual, I think that's a photo of one of the old gas taps, which presumably there just as kind of a ornament now.
But if you scroll down on the left in your mind, you'll get to a photo of the alleyway at night that's lamplit.
Oh my days.
Yeah.
That looks like where you used to go to write poetry as a teenager.
Yeah, the wet, misty, cobbled streets.
The cobbled streets. Again, it's quite blurry, which I like.
Yeah.
It's got a nice carpet as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, I would love to visit there, not just in my mind, but in real life. But I think Harrogate and Cork is quite a hefty crawl from Buckinghamshire. We'll have to sort out some kind of Moon Underwater on the Road roadshow, like Radio 1 used to do in the 70s and 80s. Yeah. We'll go to Brighton Beach and play some sound effects of people pouring pints.
Yeah. I suppose if we went up to Edinburgh, you could stop along in Harrogate, couldn't you?
Yes, you could, mate. Oh, anyway, I need to get this bar looking shipshape for this week's guest, because as you mentioned, there's a wet beer mat on it, which is not acceptable. So I'm going to replace with a fresh set of crisply printed beer mats before the arrival of our guest, who we're very excited to bring into the Moon Underwater. Well now, Robin, I tell you what, I've got to stop shining this bar. I've got to stop polishing this bar because I can actually see within myself.
Yeah, you don't want to polish it too much.
I have polished it too much and it's reflecting the contents of my very soul.
And the very cavities of your mind.
Yes, and it's put me off my wine. Because I'm drinking wine this evening, Robin.
The wine.
I have transported my sen through across the English Channel, then flown over France, Luxembourg, Germany, and I'm now mindfully in the slopes of Italy.
Oh,
Lower Italy, I think they call it.
Lower Italy. Yes.
Yeah, it is. It's Italian red. I'm just checking there, just double checking
nice.
On the bottom.
Yeah,
Primitivo di Manjuria. Oh, I can imagine drinking it in Italy.
Yeah. With a sort of a pair of kind of beige chinos and a light blue sort of Oxford shirt.
Oh, I don't mind that one bit. And perhaps a little jumper slung over the shoulder.
Why not?
And a packet of cigarettes with no filters.
Yeah.
And a big Pizza Express.
Yeah, it sounds like bliss.
And I brought that myself because I don't think you can get them in Italy.
Really?
Which is a shame because they really are superb.
Wow. I once heard a man I used to work with say on his first night in Venice he had a Domino's.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Dear friend.
Oh, dear friend.
Oh, dear friend. So dear friend. There's a Queen song that starts like that. Anyway, if I start thinking about Queen songs, I'll never be able to welcome our guest in who's at the door. Been waiting out there. I've been talking nonsense about flying over Italy in my mind. And here she comes, just walking through the door, singing hello. It's Lily Waite. Hello, Lily.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Now, Lily, you are our second Beer Writer of the Year in the Moon Underwater. We really are filling up that trophy cabinet here. Tell us about what you do for a living.
Are you just working backwards or sort of just through the list of Beer Writers of the Year?
There's not a bad shout, actually.
There's some really good interviewees on there, I imagine. You'd have to have Pete Brown on three times, though, I think.
We did a Pete Brown book in the pub library section, which was great. The Shakespeare's Local, yeah.
Yes, I sort of perked up and went, oh, that's my friend Pete. It was a lovely moment. So I am a beer writer and photographer. I also run a...
You photograph beer?
Yes, as part of the beer writing.
Wow. I want to do that. Well, I sort of photograph it with my mind.
Yes, yeah, there is that. I do that too.
But do you use a camera?
I tend to use real physical cameras as opposed to sort of mind realm photography equipment.
Okay.
But yeah, it is sometimes I pinch myself and go, how on earth do I have this job? But I also run the Queer Brewing Project, which is an LGBTQ focused, I guess we're a brewery now. We started off just as a collaboration brand, making one-off beers, and now we have our own range of delicious, lovely beers. And I'm also a ceramicist. So I have quite the mixed bag of things that I do.
So I'm going to now just pop to the Moon Underwater fridge and get a Queer Brewing beer. Is that okay?
Of course. Fantastic. Please do.
I'm afraid afraid I've drunk all mine.
But there are worse reasons for not having any more.
I'm going to head over and get two of your finest beers. I'm just popping round the side of the bar now and lifting some pretty elaborate latches.
What constitutes a mind fridge, Robin?
That's a very good question. I suppose it needs to be... He's still talking. It needs to be cold.
I'm now heading to back from the over there. Now, I have in my hand, Lily, I have Queer Brewing Wit Beer.
Yes.
And Salt Times Queer Brewing, which is a collaboration with Salt, isn't it?
Yes.
As in the company, not the seasoning.
Yeah.
Flavor Town 2 by Fieri.
By Fieri. It's a pun on Guy Fieri.
Yes, exactly.
Now, I want you, as I arrange, I'm just going to get two glasses. Wait one sec.
Okay. I can just say that the Pilsner, the Queer Pilsner, that was absolutely delicious. It was really nice.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, it's a very simple and sort of refreshing Pilsner. It was brewed with those who aren't into craft beer in mind. So some Pilsners can be quite bitter or quite occasionally astringent or too punchy.
Yeah, sometimes you almost get that slight, I don't want to use vinegary, but sometimes you do get that slight kind of sharpness to Pilsner, I think. But this one's very, very smooth. It's very highly recommended. Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you think so. I brewed it with my mum and dad in mind because some craft lagers they're not too fond of because of the intensity. So I was sort of using their palates as a benchmark.
Now, Lily, as I open these cans and provide the soundtrack of Ksk to the listeners, could you tell us about how Queer Brewing came about, what its aims are, why it was set up, and there's a sound. And fill us in on the story.
Right, so I started writing about beer through my pun-named or sort of pun-based blog, Craft Queer, which is sort of focusing on diversity and inclusion and sort of using my experience as a queer trans woman in beer, which is sort of broadly a heterosexual and sort of male-dominated industry, to sort of use that as a lens through which to view the beer industry and all the sort of comings and goings and goings-on within beer. And I ended up sort of commenting on all sorts of things and being on a bunch of diversity panels at different events, and then sort of realised that it was the same few faces on those panels and the same conversations happening over and over again. So I wanted to do something that sort of had some sort of tangible impact or... it went beyond conversation.
That's brilliant.
So tell us about some of the people who work with you at Queer Brewing and your and their experiences of the beer world as a whole.
It was initially a collaboration project, so I would work with other breweries to make one-off beers, and we would donate a proportion of the proceeds from the sales of those beers to LGBTQ charities, and we'd sort of use the labels and the social media sort of campaigns around them to talk about certain issues or in some cases just to make good beer with the word queer on it, to sort of be that visibility. But recently, yeah, so when we launched our core beers at the start of this year, which is the wit beer, the pale and the pilsner, I also hired my good friend Amber, who sort of exists in an operations and sort of sales role, and my now fiance Charlotte is our sort of designer. I think the title I gave her was creative director.
Lovely. And the design of them is great. I love the design with the kind of... What's that typeface? It's got a kind of like medieval style look to it. I like that.
It's called Adhesive Number 7. So it's actually like a black letter typeface made up of bits, what appears to be bits of tape.
Oh, yeah.
So sort of quite DIY, punk aesthetic-y.
I've just poured the wit beer. I'm afraid the pale ale lasted about... Well, as soon as it was cold, it was gone. I'll say that when it arrived. But I'm going to try the wit beer. Now... This is within my ballpark ABV wise. It's 4%, but I wouldn't usually check out a wit beer. What is a wit beer?
So it's a Belgian style of pale beer. It's a wheat beer that derives its name from the sort of the protein haze and the cloudiness derived from the wheat that sort of stays in suspension in the beer. So it is naturally hazy, but it's essentially... Hoegaarden. Hoegaarden is a wit beer, or Blue Moon. Those are the sort of the two most common examples.
It's not a lager, but it is in the lager realm. And it's not quite a sort of one of those very Weisse beers.
Yeah.
It's sort of betwixt and between, which is quite nice. I tell you what, it doesn't... When I say it tastes of flowers, I don't mean it tastes floral. It tastes like I'm actually eating a flower.
Oh, lovely.
Do you know what I mean? Like this is what I imagine a petal would actually taste like, not what a flower smells of.
I got a kind of almost like sweeties sort of quality from this one. I really, like John said, a lot of wheat beers I'm not a fan of, but I don't mind a Blue Moon now and again. And this definitely felt like that. It's not too kind of heavy, and it felt kind of... just really light and refreshing and kind of fruity. But yeah, it's nice sweet kind of flavours, I thought.
That comes from the wheat commonly and also the yeast that we used. One of the most prominent tasting notes I always give is foam bananas, that sort of sweet shop.
Oh, yeah.
Banana estery.
Yeah, or bubblegum kind of.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of thing. So it's got orange peel and coriander seeds and a touch of black pepper in it. But that sort of floral, the whole chomping on a flower as opposed to smelling it vibe kind of, I think, comes from the hops we used, a German and a Czech hop, which are both sort of quite floral and almost herbaceous in their character.
So before I head to the other end of the beer spectrum, what are some of the elements of the beer industry that you found didn't cater for as wide a possible community?
Well, I think historically, the craft beer industry, sort of since its inception in this country, sort of since 2007, 2008, 2009, has sort of primarily focused on men, like specifically white, straight, cisgender men. And sort of even sort of more recently in beer at large, it's sort of been dominated by men. Though, as Emma mentioned on her episode, beer is historically a female thing in terms of production, and women have always been so heavily involved. But just all sorts of things, from the marketing of beer to, like, sort of, again, predominantly to men, to attitudes towards sexism. It's only within the past 10 years that sexism within beer branding and marketing and at events and stuff has been really properly addressed. And it's just been quite, in terms of progression, I think it's been an industry that's dragged its heels for some time, but there is more progression sort of happening at a faster pace now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it definitely used to be in obviously visible ways, like, you know, the beer pumps with the kind of seaside postcard style humor of kind of lots of sexist tropes. That was definitely one of the most noticeable things about real ale, was kind of awful punning names and that kind of thing.
Yeah, like Dizzy Blonde goes down easy and that kind of thing.
As a cis white man, bracket straight, you don't realize that is excluding people, because you think, you may think, oh, that's childish or that's sort of lame, but you don't put yourself in the position of a woman who wants to have a beer, not really feeling like they want to get into a conversation with a barman where they're asking for like, oh, can I have a blow job, please? It's just like, it's just not worth the hassle. So you don't venture into that world of beer.
Yes, for sure. And I think as well, just even things like walking into a beer festival just before lockdown sort of kicked off and the pandemic happened. I was automatically handed a stemmed glass as opposed to a pint glass just because I'm a woman. And I was like, well, I may have wanted to drink a pint. There's just all of those assumptions. And also sort of talking to queer people across the industry and trans people as well. Just there's been not necessarily overt exclusion all the time, but there is exclusion and just a lack of consideration for different needs. It is a homogenous industry, to say the least. But there's some great people doing some great work.
Well, speaking of great people doing great work, I am about to try Flavor Town 2 by Fury.
By Fieri. You know who Guy Fieri is, don't you, John?
No. Who is it? Is it a singer?
The mayor of Flavor Town.
It's hard to explain Guy Fieri if you don't know who he is. He's kind of what's the kind of English? No, he's a sort of chef, but is he? He's not really a chef.
He's a sort of chef. What's a sort of chef?
Guy Fieri.
Yeah, who would be a good English comparison of Guy Fieri?
The only person I can think of is Greg Wallace, but I'm not sure that's fair to either of them.
Yeah, that's quite a good shout, actually.
Right, imagine Greg Wallace with bleach blonde spiky hair, a goatee, very cool shades, and one of those shirts from 2004 that has flames on.
Yes.
Like sort of the late Gary Rhodes. He was very sort of a punk. Do you mean like a punky chef?
He's not really a chef. He did programs.
What do you mean? He's not really a chef. You're either a chef or you're not.
No, there's a middle ground.
I think let's not discredit Guy Fieri's chefing career by not calling him a chef.
I'm not saying the guy's not a chef. I'm just trying to establish how much of a chef he is.
He did programs that are about food. That's what I meant. He did a program about diners, dives, and what was it called? Diners, dives.
Diners, drive-ins, and dives.
Yeah, so it's like touring around America, going to like this place does big burgers,
okay,
and things like that. A bit like Man versus Food.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will accept that Guy Fieri's a sort of chef, but anyway, I'm about to try this Imperial Porter. Now, Lily, I have pretty strict rules about the strength of beer I can consume. This beer is 8%. Now, I would never try this in a pub. I would never pick it off a shelf in a shop. That's not to say it's not great, but I am going to try it. Oh, I love the sound. It makes a good sound. I'm going to pour it. It looks, yeah, it's definitely got that sort of black coffee appearance with a dark brown head. I'm smelling it now. I'm getting sort of, you know, that healthy chocolate, which just sort of tastes like actual chocolate beans as opposed to sort of dairy milk. It smells a bit like that.
Yeah, sort of raw cacao chocolate. The stuff that, can be very intense.
Oh, Christ, it really works its way around your mouth.
In a good way.
Well, because you get that very, you get that burst of alcohol after the taste of the sort of the porter.
Yes, it's very warming.
Yes, I would not be able to neck this. And I'm not sure it's designed. I'm not saying any of your beers are designed to be necked, but I am someone who will pour a pint of 3.7% pale ale. I'll have a sip. Whoops, it's gone. That's not the case with this.
Yeah, I'm very similar in my desires for percentage. In my tastes for beer, I prefer sort of mostly sub 4% beers. But also there are occasions, like this was our second birthday beer brewed to celebrate. Hence the Flavor Town 2. Because it was initially brewed as just Flavor Town, which was, I think, from memory, designed to be a bonfire night beer. So an Imperial Porter with toffee and honeycomb. So sort of very sort of bonfire nighty, very warming, very, very rich and roasty.
I tell you what, there's definite aftertaste of like actual treacle. Like treacle used to, I've just remembered featured quite a lot in my childhood, but I'm not quite sure what it was in. Like, we didn't just eat treacle, but you know the...
Did you used to get sort of trapped in treacle and couldn't get out?
No, but you know those old-fashioned tins of, is it like Lion's golden syrup? There was also a treacle one, which was red. I think my mum used it for Christmas cakes and stuff. That's what that tastes like.
I tell you what, I've just remembered that's the only one I haven't drunk. Should I get mine and have a go?
Yeah.
Off you go to the mind fridge.
Yeah, I'm just going to the mind fridge. All right. Back in a sec.
I mean, we've just started this chat and I've already had red wine, wit beer and 8% porter. So this really could go, I mean, it could go badly wrong. I have to warn you.
Fingers crossed it won't.
No, I will. So I'm returning now to my wine. I'm not sure that they say, it's what is beer on wine feel fine? I'm not sure that they say wit beer and porter on wine followed by wine again feel fine.
Yeah, that's quite convoluted for a simple idiom.
So someone tweeted me, because I said this thing about beer before wine, coming from a kind of social commentary, like if you went from wine to beer, you're kind of going down the social ladder. And someone said, where did you get that from? And I realised I've got absolutely no idea and I may have made it up.
Let's tarry no longer and find out what you will be drinking in your dream pub, because, Lily, you are here to furnish your palace of desire, to create your perfect pub. So let's start with your first two draft options.
Yes, so the first of my draft options is Colonel's Table Beer. So again, Emma referred to the Colonel on her episode, who are one of the most fantastic breweries in the whole country. They're based in Bermondsey.
So are they part of the Bermondsey kind of mile of that kind of brewery? You know, you can go on a little tour of the breweries around Bermondsey, can't you?
Yes and no. For a while they weren't, because they didn't have a tap room. You could buy bottles to take away, so you could amble along the mile with one of their famously brown paper bedecked bottles. But only recently, I think within the last 2 years, have they reopened their tap room.
So what when you say a great brewery, what does that mean to you apart from just the quality of the product they make? Because there has been quite a lot in the press about, how shall I say, the sort of corporate approach of some breweries, shall we say, in the craft scene.
Yes.
And how they, so their ethos and how they treat their staff. So what do you mean by a great brewery?
Well, I think there's sort of two broad approaches. There's firstly their output. Like the Colonel, they produce some of the best pale ales, some of the best IPAs, some of the best mixed culture, sort of barrel-aged sour beers in the market. And everything I've had from them has just been exemplary and absolutely stellar. But they're also wonderful people. Evan, the founder, is often described as the Elrond of craft beer. He's got this lovely beard and long hair, and he's a very ethereal, almost mystical being.
Is he half elven?
I wouldn't be surprised. He once, I was at a beer festival, and I just felt this gentle tap on my shoulder. And I turned around, and he was just standing there, sort of gazing wistfully into the distance. And I was just like, oh, hello, Evan.
Aww.
He's just one of the most wonderful people in the industry, I think. So for me, it's the brewery's output, but who they are and what they stand for as well. But their table beer is one of my favourite beers of all time. It's the ABV ranges from 2.6 to maybe 3.5%. So it's a very easy drinking, very refreshing and light pale ale. And the hops, they rotate, as do many of their beers. But the base recipe stays the same.
So it's a bit like a sort of a house roast that a coffee shop might have. It does change, but it's always their table beer.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that approach. Just to be clear, when you said that everything they do is absolutely stellar, you meant in terms of the quality.
Stellar with an R, yes.
Yeah. Okay, so your second draft choice, please, Lily.
So this is Allagash White from Allagash Brewing Company, I believe, in Portland, Maine. It is the beer that inspired the wit beer you just drank, John.
Oh!
It's my colleague and friend Dave got me into it, who's based now in Seattle. But you can only get this beer sort of within a distribution footprint around New England and a few other places in the US.
Oh, I bet it would taste so good to have a pint of Allagash White in New England.
I haven't done that yet, but it's definitely a bucket list event.
So how do you, this will be useful for listeners to The Moon Underwater, how do you access these beers? Is there a certain website you go to? Are there certain stockists near where you live that might have them?
Well, Colonel Table Beer is available sort of all over the shop, literally from sort of corner shops. I live in London. You can get it in all sorts of Londises and Premiers, any shop with a discerning beer buyer, I guess. But also more mainstream shops. But you can certainly buy the table beer all over the internet. It's very easily accessible.
Where are these? I mean, we're starting to stock the bar, but what does this bar look like? What's the vibe? What is the emotional resonance, the EQ of this pub?
Well, this is a really interesting question, because not only am I sort of in the early stages of planning what will be the first queer brewing venue, so I've been thinking this all through quite a lot, and where I'm currently at is half metal bar, half gay bar. That's sort of my vibe, though trying to balance how that will appeal to the two different communities is proving tricky currently.
Is there sort of an Andrew WK element?
Oh, yes, potentially.
Could that be like a design touch point? Robin, am I on the wrong tracks there?
Well, I think let's give a shout out to, I want to make sure I've got the name right, but the Griffin Pub in Bristol used to be a gay bar and is now a metal bar.
Yes.
Hang on, let me just see. Is it called the Griffin?
Yeah, it is, because we've been there.
Yeah. Hang on, I don't think it's there anymore.
I've always been confused by that spelling, because I've always thought it's the Gryphon. And then I say that to someone and they're like, what are you on about? It's the Griffin.
Oh yeah, it's the Gryphon with the Y. Yes, right, yes.
But is that down on the way to what was the Colston Hall?
Yes, yeah. Yes. It was on the corner there. And that's the great thing about metal pubs, that in my experience, is they're always so inclusive, and you know, and like metal gigs as well, generally, and the metal community, is that despite the music being incredibly aggressive, it's a really nice bunch of people.
Well, when we were at school, we hung out with the goths, and I always found that this is in the late 90s, the more tattoos someone had, the kinder they tended to be, whereas that's now changed.
Yeah.
That's become appropriated by a sort of a different culture. Whereas the first gigs I did were in the Hatchet, which is a very, very old pub in Bristol. And it was sort of a rocker metal pub. And there just never, ever a hint of trouble in there, even though, you know, everyone had sort of piercings and tattoos all over themselves. And yet, you know, you'd walk into an all bar one and think, whoa, this could go south.
I much prefer referring to all bar one as Al Barone, which just gives it a slightly fancier vibe. But yeah, this is kind of what I've been trying to do with queer brewing. It's not bedecked in rainbows and sort of in unicorns and glitter in the sort of stereotypical queer sense. I'm trying to provide that space for queer people who don't necessarily feel spoken to by lots of rainbows and pride flags and glitter. But there's an amazing bar in Denver, which is called True Brewing. True Brewing is a heavy metal themed wild ale producing brewery. And they just have the most wonderful tap room with an altar behind the bar with taxidermy skulls and sort of candles dripping everywhere. And it is the most beautiful place in my mind. But I wrote a piece at the start of lockdown one, I believe, literally about the Mind Pub, and in response to the Moon Underwater essay, in which I talk about all the different elements of different pubs that I would sort of put together to build my Mind Pub. So in my mind, there's a very good snapshot of what this place looks like.
So bring that snapshot alive, and do feel free to read from your work if needs be.
The rough outline of the Mind Pub is as follows. I take the entrance to the Salutation Inn in Gloucestershire, replete with village flyers and other countryside paraphernalia, and attach it to the sloping mosaic floor of the Marble Arch Inn in Manchester. Pints of cellar cool Manchester bitter and more than filling pub fare will obviously come with it. All of that would sit beneath the majestic ceiling, ornately Victorian and draped in protective netting, of the Crown and Kettle, which, IRL, is just around the corner from the arch. I'd nab the pies and pork and crackling stuffed rolls from the Southampton Arms and pop them on the Harp's delightfully clustered bar, which would feature the beer selection of both pubs combined, before absent-mindedly munching on a pork pie for good measure. Of course I'd hire Alan, Al to his friends, the landlord from the Somerset Arms in my hometown of Cheltenham. In normal life, I see him once a year, when my friends and I all pile into his pub on Christmas Eve. I've known him as long as I've been drinking. Black Sabbath would play from the rigged jukebox of the now-closed punk dive I worked in at 18, and I'd resurrect the dartboard from the shithole pub I drank in as a student, though perhaps without the £1.50 double shots of vodka to go with. Sometimes the pub would be full of the quiet murmur of a sleepy Sunday afternoon, perfect for reading books while sipping a half. Sometimes it would be raucous and three deep at the bar, with friends and regulars and oh so many packets of scampi fries.
Oh, that's great.
Very, very good. Well, there's a delightful mishmash of some superb pubs, and especially nice to hear the Harp's clustered bar in there. Oh, man.
It is the best pub in London, and I miss it so.
Klaus, I know we are in the great German rock band Neu, but we need to go to the pub now. Klaus, I want to go to the pub now.
Was?
Oh, my God, Klaus, I am going to Der Moon Under Wasser.
We're now moving on to your bottled or canned selections, Lily. So you've got the Colonel Table Beer, you've got Allagash White, you've got both of those on tap. What are you having in your bottles and your cans?
So they're both bottles. The first is a Perry from Ross & Wye Cider and Perry Company.
Oh, yes, please. Oh, God, I'm going to be sick with desire.
It is, in my mind, the best Perry in the world, I think. Not that I've tasted enough to sort of make that judgment call. But it's called Flaky Bark Perry. And it's quite rare because there are thought to be only 6 mature fruiting flaky bark trees in the world.
Oh, wow.
And they're all on one hill.
What?
They're all on May Hill in Herefordshire.
Like the Tree of Elsinore.
Yes.
But 6 of them.
Somewhere Evan from the Colonel is nearby. But yeah, so I think it was 2017 they harvested the pears and produced some perry from it. But there were a couple of years when the land was sold to someone else and they couldn't get hold of the new owners. So they thought that flaky bark perry was gone for good. Until the new owners got in touch with another cider and perry maker and said, would you like these pears? And they said, we can't touch those, unfortunately. Those should go to Ross Cider, because they're the ones who make Flaky Bark Perry.
Oh,
it's just a really lovely story. But it's also just an exquisite drink. It's really quite funky on the nose. There's a lovely astringency to it, but it's not overwhelming. It's a really well-rounded perry. It is just, yeah, it's exquisite and certainly something I could drink a lot of, even though there isn't that much of it.
That's such a nice story of just sort of being really noble and really honest and nice. Also, I mean, you say you could drink a lot of it, 6.8%, so it'll take your face off.
Yes, it would, but I would commit to it.
Yeah, it looks very, very nice. Really nice bottles as well. They've got a nice swirly metallic apple design on the front.
Mm.
Oh,
they've become good friends, Albert, Mike and Becky. I wrote about them and then sort of just spent a couple of days with them getting rat-arsed on cider.
I'm going to get some of this. The nose is iconic, funky beyond compare. That's how I'm often described.
I just love the idea of a drink having an iconic nose.
Yeah.
just to be clear, is it a medium or a dry or a sweet cider? Because sometimes people who are only used to, you know, your Magnus, your Strongbows, your Thatchers, might order a drink of that and be quite shocked by how dry the cider is. So what are we talking here?
So it's classified as a bittersweet perry. So it does have that lovely tannic bitterness, or it has a good level of tannins and a nice sort of hefty whack of bitterness. But it's not sort of cloyingly sweet, but there is a nice fruit sweetness to it. So there's a difference between actual sweetness and perceived sweetness. Because you can pick up all the sort of, I guess, sweet notes in a fruit without it being too, in a cider or perry, without it being too sugary, if that makes sense.
So I guess my experience of the very dry ciders is a bit like biting into a cooking apple. It's that sort of flavour sensation, which if you're looking for a sort of sweet, quenching summer cider, can make you think, who made this?
Yes.
But you're saying there's a balance in this one.
Yes, absolutely. I also think that, I am personally a fan of sort of very dry and very sometimes sharp ciders and think they can be super refreshing. But I also appreciate that it's not for everyone. But no, this is really, really well balanced. And it's not the sort of perry where you could have one glass and then you're done.
Okay, great. Well, what's your second bottle?
It is PN18 from Tillingham Wines in Sussex. So it's a Pet Nat Rosé. So Pet Nat is short for Petit Long Naturel, which is a style of sparkling wine where it's bottled during the primary fermentation. So instead of it being like champagne or sort of using the, I think it's Method Champenoise, which is the secondary re-fermentation in bottle to get the effervescence. This is sort of a lighter, more subtle sparkle to it, or effervescence. It's really quite gentle.
So is this a natural wine?
It is.
So Ed Gamble is really into natural wines, right? And he started talking about natural wines. So I got obsessed with natural wines. So I went to the natural wine shop that Ed was talking about. I think it's called Forest Wines in Walthamstow. Really lovely stuff. And the selection of wines, it makes you feel like you're sort of in Willy Wonka, because they're all kind of crazy and exciting colours. I have to say that I bought, I think, 4 or 5 bottles. They're all quite funky. And I think part of the problem is the way that the bottles and the labels are designed make you think they're going to taste like Willy Wonka did wines, but they don't. So I was texting Ed these pictures of wines going, this is the one I'm trying next. And then I was like, yep, that's gone straight down the sink.
Oh, God.
Just because they're very, very... I don't have a particularly dry palate when it comes to alcohol. Especially ciders and wine. I don't like very tannin heavy reds. I don't like dry white, and I don't like dry or even medium cider. And I think I'd expected it to taste of sort of sweets.
So you literally wanted Willy Wonka wines.
I did want Willy Wonka wines, Lily.
That's no bad thing.
But is this the Tillingham PN18?
Yes, it is.
So I'm looking at it now, and it's a beautiful sort of deep, it almost looks like a sunset, the colour going from red to pink to a sort of peach colour. And it says the tasting notes are fruity, rhubarb and cream soda.
Well, it does look almost like a kind of cider, really, because it's got that kind of... It's quite hazy, isn't it? Am I right in saying that? It's kind of...
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Some of the ciders you can get where they're very wild yeast heavy in there. I guess presentation, perhaps you do get those funky notes. This is such a, I would almost say, a jammy wine that's quite light in body. It's quite low in ABV from memory. It's very,
yes, 10.5.
It's very quaffable in a similar way to a cider.
And also, it doesn't have a cork either. It has a kind of metal beer cap, yeah, style.
That's a growing trend amongst natural wine producers, I think.
So tell us the listeners, what does natural wine mean?
So it's also known as low intervention wine, or also perhaps biodynamic wine. So it's there's no salt, or very, very rarely sulfites added, sometimes just a little bit to balance the wine in bottle. But it's, yeah, low intervention just sort of means they do as little as possible to it to, I guess, for want of a better phrase, keep it as natural as possible.
There's a sort of myth that it doesn't give you a hangover as much as regular wine. Is that true?
I think that comes from some people react to sulfites, and that can be the source of hangovers within wines. I've had plenty of hangover from natural wine, so I don't think that that's necessarily true.
I would say that the big tasting note I had of all the wines I tried from this shop, who I must say the staff were absolutely lovely, very passionate, wonderful selection, it was dry cider. A lot of it tasted like dry cider. And I wonder if that comes from the taste of grape skin. You know how grape skin can be slightly bitter and dry? I got a lot of that. And I think maybe that perhaps the ones I chose weren't meant for me. But also, when you go into a wine shop when there's 200 wines, inevitably, you're basically picking the ones with the prettiest label to start with, because I don't know a great deal about wine.
Yeah.
But the PN18 Tillingham Pet Nat Rosé is now stocked in your dream pub.
Fantastic. I would love a glass right now, as it happens.
Well, also, you're on Guinness Clear tonight, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
AKA, your friend and mine, Hotel 2 Water O.
Guinness Clear, is that a thing?
Yeah, I've heard people calling water Guinness Clear.
It's like Crystal Pepsi, but...
But it's also in a Guinness glass.
Yes. Right.
Well, now it's time to take a little break from Lily's Dream Pub to test our brain cells, if we've got any left, with Robin's pub quiz. Robin, over to you.
Okay, everybody, pens out, eyes down, it's time for the quiz. He played for Zimbabwe, but he was born in South Africa. I know Alaska is bigger, that wasn't the question. Put your phone away. Right, Michael Jackson's Funky Monkey have been deducted 5 points.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Thanks, John. Yes, it's time for the weekly Moon Underwater pub quiz. So get your pens ready. So Lily, please feel free to take part. No pressure, and we'll go through the answers at the end, or after the ad break, actually. But this week, do I know how to party or not? It's origins of political terms.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah. So start off with this. Question one. Okay. One theory behind the origin of the word Whig, as in the British political party, which was active in the kind of 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, is that it derived from a drink that was consumed by the lower classes. But what is a pint of Whig? What is a pint of Whig? Question two. In the House of Commons, actually, this isn't a political term. It's sort of, it's kind of origins of political things. Question two. In the House of Commons, the distance across the floor of the House between the government and opposition benches is 13 feet. But why? And question three. What is the origin of the terms left and right wing? So get your brain boxes around those three questions.
Very good question that, Rob. Because that's a term you hear multiple times a day, and I've never actually thought about it.
What, just left and right wing?
Yeah.
Mm.
Very good. Can't wait to hear the answers to that. We'll be back after some moving music. Sometimes we call this the ad break, but due to how the podcast provider places the ads, they aren't always here. So if you don't hear ads, don't worry, there's nothing wrong. However, if you would like to be guaranteed zero ads in the podcast, head over to patreon.com/moonunderwater to get yourself ad-free episodes a day in advance and other multiple benefacts therein.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to the Moon Underwater. There are 3,000 tenterhooks in my line of sight right now, and I've been on every single one of them. So, Robin, please release me with the answers to your political pub quiz.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so question one was one theory behind the origin of the word Whig, as in the British political party former, is that it derived from a drink that was consumed by the lower classes. Sorry, I'm really feeling the 8% porter.
I'm sorry for sending that one.
No, that's fine.
It's a nice feeling.
It is, yeah. But what is a pint of Whig? Do you guys have any ideas?
My guess is porter.
Interesting.
I can't explain the reasoning behind that, but I just went with porter, and in my notes it says with lots of foam.
Nice.
Because that feels rather wiggy.
Yeah, wiggy.
My guess is it sort of like, if you go, what do they call it? Mine sweeping. Is it like the collection of all of the ullage?
That's quite a nice guess. It's actually a non-alcoholic drink that it's made from whey or sour milk. It's basically like cheese water.
Huh.
It was like it's quite a healthy drink.
It just sprang to my mind. Is it like that milk kefir?
It might be a bit like, yeah.
Is it like the water you get on the top of a packet of cottage cheese?
And mozzarella, yeah. That's what I imagine in my head. So yeah, basically cheese water. It's very good for you. So other theories about Whig suggest the name came from Whigamore or cattle driver. But either way, it was a kind of pejorative term for the lower classes or radicals, and was adopted by the party to show that they were kind of arguably more representative of the people or opposed to the divine right of the monarchy. So it was kind of like an insult, and as was Tory. Tory was an insult, still is, but Tory was kind of an insult, has nothing, and it's kind of adopted by. Anyway, this is getting a bit. Let's move on. Question two. In the House of Commons, the distance across the floor of the House between the government and opposition benches is 13 feet. But why? Lily?
Is it one or two swords length, perhaps, to stop them squabbling?
Absolutely. Bang right. Yeah, it's the equivalent length of two swords. Although this is likely to be purely symbolic, given weapons have been banned in the chamber for hundreds of years. John, did you get that one?
Yes, I was going to say to stop them dueling, so it was two sword lengths.
Yes, two sword lengths. Yes, good. Very well done if you got that at home. Question three, the terms left and right wing. Do you know where those terms came from?
The wings of a house or a bird?
Nice.
Which is a very political bird.
Yeah, political bird. John, any idea?
I don't know. Is it the left and the right wing of the House of Commons?
No, but Lily also thought something to do with houses. I like the idea of birds. Maybe it's the left wing. It kind of flies back to his mates, and if he flies to the right, he goes off on his own, looks after himself.
Abandons them all.
Abandons them all. I don't know. No, it's actually it comes from the French Revolution. So during the French Revolution in 1789, when members of the National Assembly divided into supporters of the king to the president's right and supporters of the revolution to his left.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that actually came from that, literally standing to the left or to the right, and that's where that comes from. So very well done if you got that at home.
Thank you very much, Robin, for a superb political pub quiz.
Thank you.
Now then, back to the matter in hand. It's Lily Waite's dream pub, and we've done the draft, we've done the bottles, we've got flaky bark perry, We've got PN18 Tillingham Pet Nat Rosé. But what are you having on your spirits desk?
So spirits have a very fond place in my heart because I got into spirits before I got into beer, thanks to one of my picks. And I did some training and thought I would perhaps open a cocktail bar or something more spirits related, and then fell accidentally into the beer world. So my first pick is Diplomatico Reserva Exclusiva, which is a beautiful aged rum, Venezuelan dark golden rum, that also got my dad into rum. I gave him a nice snifter, and every time I go home, he offers me one in return.
Nice.
It's a very good deal.
Yeah.
But it's just absolutely beautiful, almost spiced. It's not really a spiced rum, but it's got that sort of lovely, almost star anise-y kind of hint of spice.
So what's your second spirit?
Also dad related, it's Abelauer 15, the Speyside whiskey, 15-year-old Speyside single malt. It's a very easy drinking, absolutely beautiful, really easygoing scotch.
So do you prefer Speyside whiskies for their flavour profile? Or?
I think I do, certainly over sort of Islay whiskies. I went through a period of drinking Lagavulin, and I never really got on with Lafroy. It's a bit too TCP-y, sort of medicinal.
So what's the difference between, you've mentioned Speyside, you've mentioned Islay. I'm not a whiskey aficionado. I know Robin likes a single malt. What is the difference between a Speyside and an Islay, for example?
So Islay whiskies are made with barley that's been malted, is being kilned over burning peat, I think. It's been a while since I've done anything sort of spirits related, but it's the peat smoke that gives the malt its very particular and very intense smokiness. And it's often described as very peaty as well, because obviously it's kilned over peat smoke. Whereas Speyside is much more gentle. It's distilled from fermented, just, I think, very simple barley, nothing too intense.
It's a lot more floral, kind of lavendery, kind of the whereas the, you know, the Lafroy, it's got that real smoky kind of very earthy kind of tastes. But I love the kind of floral ones as well myself.
I think I'd describe Islay as sort of pointy, and Speyside is much more rounded.
I think I either watched a documentary about whiskey. I think it was called The Golden Dram. And I was speaking to a whiskey expert, and he said, and I think it's a similar thing to red wine, like the sort of the value sweet spot in whiskey, he said, is between about 12 and 15 years old. And actually, as much as people go insane for very old whiskies, you really are over that age of 15 years just paying for the rarity, and the flavour is not improving at the same rate as the price, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think when I've had really old whiskies on the very rare occasion, it's not tasted proportionally better for the price than, as you say, a sort of 15-year-old.
It's the classic headphones equation.
Yeah.
If you're going to buy some headphones, buy 40 to 50 quid headphones, because they will be 4 times better than 10 quid headphones, but 400 quid headphones won't be 10 times better than 40 quid headphones. Am I right?
Yeah, that famous headphones equation.
It's a bit like the, do you know that Limmy sketch where he's in an electronic shop and he keeps trying to get someone to buy the most expensive item? He's like, yeah, like that. There's three reactions, you know, for the so maybe you're like that with the headphones. Yeah,
well, I mean I use it in so many different parts of my transactional life, but that, yeah, that sweet spot. So you're not going Heinz unless it's on offer, but you're not going own brand value. You're going own brand or own brand finest if it's cheaper than Heinz. If Heinz is on offer, get Heinz. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you're talking mayonnaise, because Heinz mayonnaise is an abomination.
Yes, agree. Jugree.
I have Hellmann's vegan mayonnaise is really good. But if anyone from Hellmann's is listening, they do both a jar and a sort of a squeezy bottle. But the problem is the consistency of vegan mayo is too viscous to bring it to the bottom of the bottle. So when it stops coming out, the interior of the bottle is coated with, I'm going to say, 10 servings of mayo that you have to chuck in the blooming recycling.
And then you're reduced to slamming it on the counter like a lunatic.
I've cut open a squeezy bottle of mayonnaise.
So have I!
I feel like an insane person. Do you remember that? That insane Chris de Burgh interview he did where he went off on a tangent and started talking about a toothpaste being a rip-off. How he always cuts...
Yeah, because you have to cut the end off.
He always cuts open his toothpaste to get more.
In fairness to Chris, he's got a point.
I think he can afford toothpaste.
Well, that's the thing. Is it the sort of point a man worth £80 million should be making? But I do agree with it. He's not wrong on that count.
No, absolutely.
I think he says it's a swizz, doesn't he?
Yeah. What a swizz! Yeah, it's great.
He was only worth £70 million until he started saving all of that toothpaste money.
Yeah.
Oh, good point. You save the pennies and the pounds will come.
Oh, that's interesting.
Superb choices, Diplomatico, Exclusivo Reserve Rum, and Abelauer, is it, sorry?
I think it's pronounced Abelauer.
Abelauer, 15-year-old single malt whiskey. But now it's time to improve ourselves as we head into the pub library with Robin to pick this week's publy tome. Robin, thoughts?
Thanks, John. Yes, so this week in the pub library, I've got an author called Gregory Corso, who was one of the Beat generation, I guess. You know, he's sort of your Kerouacs, your Ginsbergs, but he's kind of one of the lesser known ones. And he had a very, very troubled life, kind of in and out of prison quite a lot. You know, not an easy life, but he's a really lovely poet. And what I love about this poem is it captures just that a kind of lovely energy of being slightly drunk. And also it's like a beautiful poem about New York, but it's also like it just captures just such a small moment that I really like it. So this is Gregory Corso, and it's called Second Night in New York City After 3 Years. I was happy, I was bubbly drunk. The street was dark. I waved to a young policeman. He smiled. I went up to him and, like a flood of gold, told him all about my prison youth, about how noble and great some convicts were, and about how I had just returned from Europe, which wasn't half as enlightening as prison, and he listened attentively. I told no lie. Everything was truth and humour. He laughed, and it made me so happy. I said, absolve it all, kiss me. No, he said, and hurried away.
Oh, God, that's so good.
I really like that. It's just about this just one moment of when you're just full of that kind of energy of a night. Do you know what I mean?
But it's that enthusiasm of drunkenness where you think that everything you're saying has such meaning.
Yeah.
And is so profound. But like the cliche is that it's not because you're drunk, but actually I think maybe it can be.
Yeah. I was happy, I was bubbly drunk. It's great. So, sorry, carry on, Lily.
Sorry, it reminds me of that buoyancy of tipsiness.
And yes, you're not exactly.
Sort of necessarily spewing nonsense, but yeah, there's more confidence in your words than there perhaps should be.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. I went up to him and like a flood of gold.
Well, that's what it feels like when you're talking and you've got to get this point out because it's the best point you've ever made.
Yeah,
and it's not a cocaine gold. It's a booze gold. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's definitely a booze gold. And then just asking the policeman to kiss him. Absolve it all. Kiss me.
That sounds more like an MDMA gold than anything.
Yeah, it does.
Just
yeah.
Running up to policemen going, hello.
I've never taken cocaine, but I've been bored by drunks and I've been bored by people on coke, and I would rather be bored by someone who's drunk. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Great pub library, Robin.
Thank you. Gregory Corso.
So... Lily, in your half metal, half gay bar, with its selection of pies, flooring and doors from various pubs, you've got a jukebox. Well, we've got a jukebox here at the Moon Underwater, and we are desperate for your jukebox choice. Now, you mentioned that Black Sabbath were playing in the background of your Mind pub. So what are you selecting for the Moon Underwater jukebox?
Well, this was probably the hardest choice because there are so many...
So many songs in the bloody world, aren't there?
There are so many songs, there are so many albums, and there are equally so many artists. I think sort of I cycled through Black Sabbath's Paranoid, Transgender Dysphoria Blues by Against Me, which is a ripper of a punk album. There's a fantastic EP by two post-metal bands called Conjurer and Pine, which was described as four songs in the key of mirth, which is just, it's very apt because it's just an absolutely beautiful and uplifting piece of music. But I had to settle with ABBA Gold.
Oh, great.
Because it's just, I could listen to it on repeat forever and never get bored. And it is, I think Black Sabbath and ABBA are the two most influential bands of all time, perhaps.
ABBA Gold and Queen's Greatest Hits 2 were the first albums I ever bought on CD. However, I do have personal beef with ABBA Gold because there is a danger, a very real danger, a very current and present threat that ABBA Gold is going to overtake Queen's Greatest Hits 1 as the greatest selling album of all time in the UK. Now, don't you worry, Queen are on this. They have put things in place to make sure that that never, ever, ever happens. However, with ABBA reforming, there is a chance that Queen's spot atop the greatest ever selling albums of all time in the UK is under threat. I just want to put that out there.
I sense that there's a preference for Queen over ABBA here.
Just a bit, mate. Have you not seen my Queen Emporium?
Oh, I could see through the haze of this realm to, yes.
Yeah, it's two shelves of Queen merchandise in the moon underwater. Some official, some non-official. Sorry, Roger, Brian, Freddie, John, and Mary, who gets Freddie's share.
I mean, ABBA over Queen any day, but...
Whoa. Let's just cycle back a bit. We were getting on very well. We were enjoying our pubs. I'm going to allow ABBA Gold on the jukebox, but, you know, some of your comments should really have parental guidance warning.
Sorry, I was being a flood of gold then.
Yes. Oh, very good. Okay, so we've got ABBA Gold on the jukebox. We've got rum. We've got single malts. We've got Pet Nat. We've got Perry. We've got we've got Algash White. We've got Colonel Table Beer. But you've got one more choice. It could be anything from any realm, any time, past, present, or future. Maybe not future. We don't know what drinks they'll have in a billion years. What's your wild card choice?
It is Wild Beer Co. and Firestone Walker's Violet Underground, a sour beer from 2015.
I've had some Wild Beer Co. stuff before. It's Bristol, isn't it?
Yeah, so they opened their first bar in Cheltenham, where I'm from, and it was my first sort of craft beer job working behind that bar. So that's how I got into everything. It's thanks to that job that I am where I am. And this was sort of the first beer that really blew my mind in a really spectacular sense. It's a beer, it's two beers blended, fermented with Somerset cider, apple orchard yeast.
Wow.
With Californian raspberries and French candied rose petals.
Oh my goodness.
It's just absolutely mind-blowing. And I was in a bar in New York in 2019, there for a tap takeover of one of my friend's breweries, and I saw it on the tap list and I was like, surely this can't be that beer, it can't be the same beer from sort of 4 years prior to that, and they'd rebrewed it, and I got to taste it again, and it was just, yeah, a really lovely moment. And it's wonderful how a drink or food can be so transportative, because I was taken right back to where it all began for me.
Are you having this in bottle or on draft?
In bottle.
The bottle is absolutely beautiful. It looks like the sort of tonic that Sherlock Holmes might have in his medicine cabinet. It's quite something.
Yeah, it sort of harks back to a prior time. But it just speaks of something. It speaks of deliciousness.
But also, you can get that wrong, sort of that sort of Victoriana look. Like, I saw an advert for Hendrick's gin the other day, and I just, it was all like paper cuts of Victorian women and slightly Monty Python, and I just thought, oh, sod off. It just felt like it had been come up with in a boardroom or a sort of an advertiser's, whereas this just looks really classy, like someone whose background is design has really thought and taken care with the label, as opposed to just thinking, oh, what looks like it's from the past?
Yeah, you could go very sort of very bad Jack the Ripper tour flyer.
Yeah, just a lot of sort of, what are they called, those dresses that Victorian ladies wore that sort of come out a lot?
Crinoline, I think.
Yeah, that's the material, but is it a bust or a...
A bustle.
A bustle, and you just think, oh, try harder. See better, Leah.
Can I have the name of the beer again? So it's Wild Beer.
And so the two collaborating breweries are Wild Beer Co. and Firestone Walker. And the beer is called Violet Underground.
Yeah, if you search in your mind for Violet Underground beer, it'll be the first hit in your mind.
Violet Underground. Oh, wow. Yeah, that's stunning.
And it tasted better than it looked as well.
My mind asked me if I was 21 years or older then on the...
Yeah, and unfortunately we are now, Rob.
Yeah, God. That looks fantastic, yeah. Avant-garde wild ale.
You're barred.
Okay, Lily, we've stocked the pub. It's half metal, it's half gay bar, it's very accepting because tattoos in this realm are a sign that you are a kind person, which was the case in the 90s. Not so much these days.
There's a massive poster of Guy Fieri on the wall.
Yes, with me staring at it going, is he a chef or is he not a chef? Make your mind up. But what is not going to be allowed in Lily Waite's dream pub? What are you barring?
So I would have said bigotry in all its forms had that not been stolen by the wonderful Emma Inch.
Well, you can still ban it. You don't have to have bigotry in your pub just because Emma doesn't want it.
No, I do. I'll have to deal with all of the transphobia that would come in anyway. Because I'm going to go for that guttural roar that happens when someone drops a glass. You know, that sort of that swell of noise and macho energy.
I'm going to do an impression of it now, Lily. Is this what you're talking about? Hooray!
Yes, yeah, that made my skin crawl. but it is that sort of, it's a very, I guess, primal response, but it makes sort of your teeth clench and your fists clench and your hairs stand up on the back of your neck, especially as someone who doesn't always feel safe in certain pubs, or even when I was working behind a bar, the kind of people who would love to do that way were the same kind of people that would make homophobic jokes at me or that kind of thing. So it's very much tied to working behind bars, but also just being in pubs and bars, and you just hear it. And it's just something that I find repellent.
Well, I guess it's also a sort of reminder of the aggression of crowds, that at any moment it could turn. Even though I think there is probably an element in that glass smash cheer, almost a sort of a trying to subconsciously break the tension of the fact that someone's made a mistake. But I think you're right in that it actually reminds you that there's a power in that room that can be used for good or evil.
Yeah, absolutely. And also just sort of the comments that come with it, like you hear the roar and then someone goes, oh, is that coming out of your paycheck? And it's like, no, it was just a mistake. But the most interesting instance of that I've ever come across is at the Great American Beer Festival that happens in non-pandemic years every year in Denver. And they don't have glasses. They have these little plastic cups that are sort of tough and plastic, and when you drop it on the hard floor it makes this sort of tinkling sound, and then you'll hear that very faintly, and then you'll just hear this wave of just sort of ripple across the room, and you can hear it and almost feel it coming.
Have you got a sound you would like to replace that with, So when a glass is smashed, is there a sort of a jingle or a horn or a sound effect you would like to be able to hit?
The sort of, yeah, the Victorian car horn, the sort of happy, happy kind of
yes, we could do that. Replace that with a car horn.
Could you also replace bigotry in all its forms with a comedy car horn?
Yes, or a swanny whistle.
Oh, very good. Yeah, someone goes to call out a slur and just goes...
Yes. That's good. That would be quite funny if every time anyone tried to use homophobic or racial or misogynist slur that a swanny whistle just came out of their mouth.
Imagine the fury that would...
Well, it would like, stop them doing it.
Yeah, but they'd keep going and keep trying and it would just make the swanny whistle whistle even more. It'd be brilliant.
Even just swearing. I always think swearing is funnier bleeped.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It's
yeah.
so much funnier bleeped.
I kind of agree. I tend to swear quite a lot. And I think I would find it wearing after a while if every time I tried, I would just bleep, just walk around my own house.
Hurry up, please. It's time.
What are we naming this pub with car horns and swanny whistles aplenty, with Wild Beer Co., Firestone Walker, Violet Underground, ABBA Gold on the jukebox, Diplomatico Rum, ABBA Lauer 15-year-old, Flaky Buck, Perry, PN18, Tillingham, Petnat Rosé, Allagash White and the Colonel Table Beer. All of this is happening in a half metal, half gay bar, but what is it called?
It's called the Battle Axe and Glamour.
Oh, I don't mind that.
So it's a sort of a little hint to the, I guess, the metal community's love for medieval weaponry.
yeah, it's strange how they're obsessed with medieval weaponry, isn't it?
I don't blame them. I really would love to have a battle axe hung up on my wall. and luckily, there will be one sort of displayed behind the bar, not in front of the bar, behind the bar in the Mind pub. And then I've always just been fascinated by the idea of the glamour being a sort of magic spell, like someone being under a glamour. Mm. So not necessarily.
Well, there's a brilliant John Burnside book called I Put a Spell on You, where he talks about the word glamour and its meanings and this kind of magical kind of thing.
You have to read it, Lily. It's called I Put a Spell on You. It is a superb book.
Yeah, I think so. But it also sort of speaks to the joy of dressing up to go out and all the sort of more superficial connotations and just feeling yourself and feeling fancy and beautiful. And that's what I want people to feel in this pub whilst wielding a battle axe.
Yes, absolutely. And that'll probably also, as well as the car horn and swanny whistle, will probably put people off using any kind of slurs if you've got a battle axe in your hand.
I did think about calling it something like the glittery battle axe, but it just didn't have the same ring.
Yes. Well, I think glitter is sort of a bit like tattoos. Glitter is now becoming sort of everyone's property, which is fair enough. Glitter's fun.
I've had it with this glitter appropriation.
Yes. Well, thank you, Lily Waite, for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you and to feel the battle axe and glamour taking shape right before our eyes. It's now yours to carry around with you wherever you go. And Lily, where can people go to follow Queer Brewing, to read your beer writing? What are the main hubs?
So on Twitter and Instagram, it's at Queer Brewing to follow us for sort of all sorts of updates. And for my own personal stuff, it's lilywaite_.
Lovely stuff. And what's the Queer Brewing website?
It's thequeerbrewingproject.com.
Lovely stuff. Thequeerbrewingproject.com. Do go and check that out. Have their wit beer and have at your peril their porter. And Lily, you get a song to play you out of the Moon Underwater from ABBA Gold. What are you going to pick?
Oh, choices. I think Gimme, Gimme, Gimme.
And Lily, we thank you so much for joining us. And now you may leave into the vast unending night with your pub under your arm, in your heart and in your mind.
Thank you ever so much. It's been an absolute joy.
Yeah. Well, folks, as Lily makes her way down rapidly shifting cobbled streets, bemisted and begloaming, we thank her for her time. And also welcome you next week to The Moon Underwater, where we'll be welcoming Suze Kempner through the threshold and into the correct realm. Please send us your missed mail at john@moonunderpod.com and get the live tickets for the Sunday gigs in August and September. All the details are at moonunderpod.com. And as mentioned, there are extra seats now released after changes to the government guidance. So it remains for me to call time at the bar. And we will see you very soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.